Hey, Christine, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good, Lauren. How about you?
Good. I am starting a new job on Monday, so I actually have a week off in between, and I'm just kind of chilling, hanging out, went skiing, just trying to take it easy and go into my new job with like a fresh mindset. So good stuff.
Oh my gosh, nice. I didn't know you were off this week.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's training for Ironman 70.3 in Boulder in August. So staying pretty active for that. Yeah. What have you been up to?
Things are going pretty good. I'm just, you know, working, doing a lot of music projects, like still kind of in like the rehearsal phase with Chaos Pixie. We're looking for a bass player. So if anyone in the New York area, especially girls, women, non-binary people, if you play bass, hit me up. But yeah, just working on music, working on this podcast.
I feel like we're finally in a good place with the pandemic where it's like, you know, after 2 years, it's finally starting to feel normal, which at this point doesn't feel normal anymore. I think it's like more overwhelming than it used to be because it's been so long for all of us, but that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's like socially overwhelming a little bit, but
yeah,
I'm like less worried about COVID because I'm still kind of in that zone of just had it antibodies. Like, I don't know how long that'll last before I'm like, start being like, oh, I'm going to get it again.
Oh yeah.
Like at this phase, I'm just kind of like, meh. Probably won't. If I did, it wouldn't be bad because I just had it.
Yeah.
Hope this podcast is a good refuge. If you're going
to. Yeah, we try to keep it positive here, even though we're talking about some crazy, crazy shit.
Yeah, today's episode's like less positive, though, I feel like. It's because.
Yeah, by the way, this is Pod of the Dragon, you guys. That's the episode. That's the podcast where we talk about Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon and anything else going on in Westeros. And we are here today to continue our epic Game of Thrones rewatch. Christine, what season are we on? 5?
We're on season 5. We're doing the first 5 episodes. Before I forget, we want to start with our spoiler and trigger warnings. So spoiler warning, this is a complete rewatch. So we are not just going to be talking about these 5 episodes. We're going to be talking about like anything that happens throughout all of Game of Thrones, including the endings. So if this is your first watch through, finish it up and then come back to us and listen later. And then, you know, content warnings too, is anything that happens in Game of Thrones we talk about here, and there's some disturbing stuff. So today we might be talking about violence, rape, murder, other sexual violence, incest, torture. If you don't want to hear
lots about of bad shit things.
Yeah, lots of bad shit. It can get pretty dark. So if you don't want to hear about those things, maybe just catch us on the minisodes.
Yeah. So today, again, we're going into the first 5 episodes of season 5, and that includes The Wars to Come, The House of Black and White, High Sparrow, Sons of the Harpy, and Kill the Boy. So let's dig right in to episode 1, The Wars to Come.
Yay. So this one starts totally different than any other season. I think it's or pretty much any other episode at all. And I think it's one of the best show openers.
This nonlinear scene where we go back to Cersei's childhood. We don't do this at any point before in the show. And I don't think it happens ever again. Like we've talked about this in the podcast before. Anything that we see in the past or the future is through something happening in the present, like Bran's visions, for instance. This is a complete outlier in that sense. And I remember on one of the like after the show things that D.B. Weiss and what's the other guy's name? David Benioff. I remember in one of the after the show things or after the episode things, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff were talking about this and they were like, yeah, the only way we can go back in time is through visions. And then I was like, wait, what about this fucking scene? So they don't even like They're not even consistent with their own shit. I love them for a lot of reasons, but we also know that we hate them, so.
D&D kind of forgot about that comment they made when they made this scene.
I think that comment was from a later season, so I think they forgot that they made this scene.
The D&D kind of forgot about this scene with Cersei and the witch.
It's like a great scene.
Just like Danny kind of forgot about the Iron Fleet.
So many things were forgotten in the last couple seasons. But anyway, the scene is really cool. So it's like her and her friend like go to this witch and like get predictions about the future. And the witch is like, and Cersei's like, am I going to marry the king? And like, will I, or she says, am I going to marry the prince? Cause she thinks like a Targaryen. And then the witch is like, no, you're going to marry the king. Cause like Robert Baratheon. And then Cersei's like, will we have children? And the witch is like, no, the king will have many children. You will have 3, which is great. Cause we obviously know that she doesn't have any Baratheon boys.
No. And then she's like, that doesn't make any sense. So then she goes, gold will be their crowns. Gold will be their shrouds.
I feel like she shouldn't be that surprised, at least based on the books, like even based on the show too. It's like, she's been with Jaime like romantically since they were children, so like,
yeah,
is it really that big of a shock, Cersei?
She didn't know where babies came from.
I guess not. Nobody explained the birds and the bees to her. She figured it out eventually.
But yeah, so then she basically says gold will be their crowns, which, you know, implies that they are children of Jaime and not the king, and gold will be their shrouds, which implies that they're all gonna die.
And that they're Lannisters, because the Lannisters love gold.
Yeah, they're all going to die. So she already lost Joffrey at this point, and now we're like opening up this season learning that at some point she's going to lose both her children, and she kind of like knows that on some level.
Yeah, she's known it since she was a kid, basically, is what it's implying.
Yeah, and then the big thing that I think becomes really, really relevant in this season is she says, you'll be queen for a time until another younger and more beautiful casts you down and takes all that you hold dear. So she believes that it is Marjorie.
What do you believe, Christine?
Well, I don't know. It's Bran, I guess.
Right, because like Marjorie, sure, like Marjorie takes the queenship at, like next, but like barely. She's there for like a hot sec.
That's what I'm saying, that D&D kind of forgot about this scene and didn't make it relevant.
Oh, well, yeah, they made it clear that they forgot.
It's not relevant. No, she thinks it's Marjorie. It was implied at the time, because then they like cut to like a scene of Daenerys shortly after, I think, that like that's what it was implying, that like, you know, Daenerys was going to come, and then the final season, it's like the battle between the two queens, whatever, makes sense.
Right, but, which would have made more sense if Daenerys actually took the fucking throne, but they forgot that they implied that, or that was, they forgot that they wrote that, I guess. Did they forget that they wrote Daenerys to be the real queen in the end? Seems like a big thing to forget.
They just kind of forgot. Ooh, we're salty in this episode. I like it. In the books, too, the scene, the prophecy's longer, and they say the Valonqar will choke the life from her or something, which means little brother. So then that was part of it too, is people thought Tyrion was going to kill her, but then other people were like, maybe it's not Tyrion, maybe it's Jaime. And I remember thinking because of that one of the last episodes,
Cersei was born first, right?
Yeah. So like when Jaime goes back to get Cersei, I'm just like, he's going back to kill her.
Wasn't there something about like, it maybe means that, or maybe it could mean something else? I don't remember. I read the book so long ago. All right, let's move on from that scene.
So now we get a Lannister funeral, which is nice because it doesn't involve any rape this time.
Yeah, for once, Jaime and Cersei are in the same room with a dead body and don't fuck. So that's new.
That's new. He's got the creepy rocks on his eyes like they all do.
Yeah. Tyrion is fucked off across the Narrow Sea, right?
Yeah, so we wake up, he's like, comes out of his box and he's in
Pentos.
Pentos! Yeah, that's
yeah, so Tyrion comes out of his box in Pentos.
Which is like the same place that Dany is in the first episode.
Okay. Yes, so yeah, we haven't been back here since season one or season two, maybe. And Tyrion has a beard now, and I'm very into it. Looks great.
Love Peter Dinklage with a beard. Very here for it.
And then, he is gonna, you know, he comes out of the box, and he's like, very into wine. I mean, he always has been into wine, but like he's a little more struggling with it now.
He doesn't really have a purpose anymore. Like,
yeah. And I mean, it doesn't like become a big thing, I think, because like once he does find a new purpose, he kind of like gets his shit together. Right.
Yeah. I mean, he drinks and he knows things, but later he mostly knows things.
I mean,
his dad and his lover the last time we saw him, and now he's just kind of like floating through an exile, doesn't really have a purpose. He's figuring
out. Oh yeah. I mean, he's gone through some shit. See, this is the reason that we don't like talking about this season, because it's all the bullshit and Marine with the harpy.
Ugh, Marine is just like
I just
like,
don't care about this plot line. I get it. And like, I think we talked about this in the last Game of Thrones rewatch episode, where I think it's like politically a good move for Dany to stay there. And I think she's doing the right thing and like supposed to be learning from this experience, but I just don't fucking care.
And it's like extra frustrating because, and we'll like get into more details as we like get some of these scenes, but she's learning some hard lessons while she's here that really point to her not being the Mad Queen. Like, she's trying to like learn the balance and learn mercy, and like she makes some bad choices and she figures right. it out and she loses some people. And like,
I always thought like that was the point of this, was like exactly. that she's learning from this experience. And then we just throw that out the window, I guess.
Yeah, and the fact that it gets thrown out the window, I'm just kind of like, why did we sit in Marine for these seasons? Like, what was the point of this plot?
Right, because I could have seen like a lot of the things like that happen in this season kind of like coming back around, and like her handling them differently or whatever, making these scenes better by like having them referenced and her changing her attitude later on. But that's just not what happens, and it just seems a little bit pointless.
It's just a waste. Yeah, and I feel like in the books, like the Marines sort of like centralized in that you have like a lot of, in like that last book, A Dance with the Dragons, you just have like a lot of different characters who are all on their way to Marine. So like you have like the Greyjoys are going because they want to, Euron wants to make her queen, his queen, and Tyrion's on his way. And some characters that don't exist in the show are on their way. And like, it just like feels like there's like some reason that she's there and it's central to the story in the show. Like there's none of that really happening except for, you know, Tyrion's on his way and Jorah's off being fucking Jorah.
Yeah. And a lot of those plot lines happen at like different points in the show rather than all at once.
Yeah, exactly. And it just like this, like scenes with her just feel so separate from the rest of the show and like the things that we're supposed to care about.
It, which like it's not even just because she's in a different place, because she's always been off doing her own thing compared to our main characters, but it has seemed more tied in previous seasons. So anyway, we're not going to like spend too much time touching on these Marine scenes because we'll just get annoyed, but that's what's happening in all five of these episodes. So we'll kind of dip into it here and there, but I'm not going to dwell on it too much. Let's skip up to the wall, where Ollie is starting to dislike Snarky Narg, aka Jon Snow, and Alistair Thorne still sucks ass, and Gilly fucking annoys me in this because she's like asking Sam to like deliver things that he can't. She's like, she like wants him to leave and go with her, but also she's like, well, if you leave you'll die, so like I need to stay here. And he's like, this isn't my fucking, like, I don't own this. Like, what does she fucking want from him? She's just very demandy and complaining. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, it works out in her favor. She does get to, like, stay with him forever, so.
Yeah, and then, you know who else is fucking annoying at the wall is Melisandre, who is just real thirsty for Snarky Narg. She can tell,
like,
he is.
Thank God she doesn't know he's a fucking King's Blood, dude. Yeah,
does she on some level know that?
At this point? She'd like, kill the fuck out of him.
No, she'd fuck him and make shadow babies with him instead.
Maybe. But she wanted to kill Gendry.
I know, because Gendry, like, because Gendry, I don't know. Jon Snow has, like, more King's Blood than.
Also, do you think that she would count Targ blood as King's Blood? Or does she only count Baratheon blood as King's Blood? Because we've talked about this before, how it's, like, stupid that, like, one generation later, they have, the Baratheons have magic blood. Like, they just fucking took the throne and now they're magic? What?
I feel like the Targaryens would have more magic blood because they're like tied to dragons and the dragons are tied to the Red God or whatever.
Right. They're biologically part dragon because somebody fucked a dragon
at some point. So they are blessed with the Red God or whatever. I don't fucking know. Melisandre, real thirsty, like asks him if he's a virgin for some reason. And he says no. And she says, good.
Why? They're like riding up the fucking elevator together, all serious. And she's like, are you a virgin?
Like, I hate her.
Dude, fuck off.
Like, I don't super hate her in general, but like in this season, she's the worst that she has.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it comes off in this podcast as we hate her more than we do. She does a lot of weird shit. So,
yeah, I don't know. She likes Stannis, which sucks. She's like too thirsty. Yeah, I feel like I've said it before. Like, she's the kind of character that I would like, but like, she does annoying things like burning children and being obsessed with king fluid. So, I like the Red Priestess that we meet. Maybe it's next season. She's only in one episode, the one that we meet in Meereen.
Isn't she the one that Tyrion runs into in Somewhere Between?
No, that's someone else.
That's a different one.
Start meeting, like, there's a lot. It's a big religion. So, we start meeting, like, more in this season that, like, I think the Red God. But yeah, like, right now it's really just like we met Thoros, right, of Myr, and we've met Melisandre, but it seems like it's a bigger religion in Essos. So, like,
yeah, for sure.
Tyrion runs into them and we'll run into them in Meereen, stuff like that. I feel like they are better Red Priestesses than Melisandre because they don't keep trying to get in touch with King's fluids.
Yeah, they're not as into King fluids or fucking everyone or just taking their genitals and tits out in general.
I hope someone's playing a drinking game with our podcast. Whenever we say king fluid or fucked a dragon, you have to take a shot.
This is not a good episode. Beer.
We are not encouraging anyone to drink irresponsibly.
I mean, follow your heart, but like, take care of yourself.
Yeah, don't be a Tyrion.
All right, so then Stannis is like, hey, wildlings, I have an idea. It's really great. Bend the knee. And they're like, how about not? And then Stannis is like, oh, Jon Snow, you can make them do this. You can make Mance bend the knee. And he's like, why the fuck would you think I could do that?
Does not bend the knee. Mance is a great character. I wish we saw more of him. Bounty dies in this episode. So he...
But before that, we've got a Sansa scene, Christine. Peter Baelish. I just started referring to him as Peterphile because he's a Peterphile.
He's a Peterphile.
He's like hitting on Sansa, who does, by the way, look very hot.
Yeah, I like black hair goth Sansa a lot. I wish we saw more of that.
Yeah, goth Sansa is the shit.
Goth Sansa.
But yeah, they're like watching Robin Aaron try to fight and he sucks at it. It's an awkward little scene. Brienne and Podrick are like hanging out nearby to where Sansa is. And she basically like walks right by them, but in a carriage because like, of course, somehow this giant world, they keep like running into each other. Like what? Brienne just keeps running into people randomly.
She's like running into people. It's a big country, especially like if we go back to the first season on the King's Road, like how long it took them to get from Winterfell to King's Landing. Like there's a lot of surface area there.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like she's like running into people at like cities or castles or anything. It's just like in the wilderness. And just I'm like no
countryside. Like what?
No, this is very
oddly convenient.
So let's go back to the funeral for Tywin. Cersei is talking to Loras and they hate each other. Tommen is there too. He's obsessed with Margaery. And then I have a big note that says, oh no, Lancel is a cultist now.
Oh no, he is. Yeah, this is when we learn about the sparrows. I think maybe that's a lot of why I don't like this season. Like,
I was going to say, it's another plot line that I don't care about.
Yeah, like I don't like all the religious stuff with like the cultists who take over the faith militant. It's just like not interesting to me.
And I don't think, like the guy who plays the High Sparrow, I don't know his name, but like, I don't know if it's him as an actor or just the character, but like, I don't care. Like that character is not compelling to me.
Nope.
I don't know. I could see where, like, they could have, if they're going to put a cult leader in, you could have made that, like, a character that was, like, really someone interesting, but he's not.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point, is that, like, he doesn't, like, see himself as a cult leader. Like, he seems very...
Oh, they never do, those cult leaders.
But he seems very, like, he has the right idea about a lot of things, and, like, he took off his shoes and gave them to somebody who needs it more. He's very, like, I don't know, social.
And he reminds me of Stannis in a lot of ways, where he's, like, black and white to a fault, and, like, good and bad are, you know, written in stone, and there's no gray area, right? Like,
yeah.
Season one Stannis.
No, I agree. And then Stannis is also kind of a cultist.
Oh, yeah. Stannis is in a cult.
Like I feel like it's a commentary on, like, extremist religion, where it's, like, there's so much good that can come from it, like, take care of others and community and, like, things like that. And then it gets taken to the extreme where there's just, like, you know, yeah, just, like, punishing people for shit, really brutal, merciless bullshit, you know. And it's like,
yeah, there's a lot about religion in this season, and I just mm-hmm. don't care.
Yeah, and it feels not even dark this season too. Like, I mean it's always dark, but I mean, like, it's just, like, literally darker, like the cinematography of it, like, it
feels, and it
like
continues to get darker.
Yeah, like, it feels like the quote-unquote dark ages.
Should we go to Marine?
Yeah, we get Dario's ass in this episode.
Yes, we do. We've got Hisdar wants to reopen the fighting pits, and opening them would, like, show respect for their traditions, blah blah blah. I think honestly that he has a point with this. Just, like, looking at the real world, and, you know, different iterations of cultures colliding, like, it's obviously mm-hmm. works out a lot better when colonizers or what have you are willing to adopt traditions of the locals. And so I think he has a good point with that, honestly. Obviously, like, she's not the one, like, the one thing she can't bend on is accepting the tradition of slavery, but I feel like if she's gonna, like, which has obviously been a huge part of their culture, so I feel like if she's gonna cut that, like, she needs to meet them with a lot of other stuff for it to, like, be at all okay with them.
Yeah, I agree. She's like an imperialist and a colonizer a little bit in Marine, like, as much as it's like slavery is bad and it's good that she went in and freed the slaves. Like, even, like, the scene where, like, earlier in this episode where, like, the harpy statue topples and she puts up the Targaryen flag instead. And, like, we're all on her side. So we're like, yeah, that's cool. But it's really, like, it's like she's just, like, coming into this other culture, like, calling all their traditions barbaric, like, pushing in. And I think, like, Hisdar does have a point where he's like, we can probably meet halfway here.
Yeah, it's like, change the things that are really bad, but, like, you can't just erase their culture completely. And obviously she does eventually come around on that, but I feel like it would have been better had she, like, done some of that stuff from the top rather than, like, because everything gets so bad. But yeah, then Dario comes in and they have a little naked chat, and we get to see Dario's ass. He also has a good point here, which is that she's not the mother of the Unsullied. She's the mother of dragons.
So she has to go check on the dragons, and they are pissed off.
Yeah, because you locked your children in a closet. Like, what? Obviously, they're mad. They are, like, big snip-snappy fire boys, and she's scared.
Snip-snappy fire boys.
Well, they're big now, and they're snippy-snappy.
Yeah, the snip-snappy fire boys. And she's sad. She looks kind of scared of them, too.
Which is inconsistent with a later scene, like the very next scene when she goes to see them, where she's, like, very confident around them and, like, is commanding them again. So there's a little bit of weirdness with her interaction with the dragons in this season, because in some instances it seems like she can't control them at all. And then other times she's, like, back to season two or whatever. So it's kind of weird, but.
Yeah, but she's trying to figure it out, because this is the same, yeah. We haven't watched this episode yet in our rewatch, but, like, the episode where, like, Drogon comes to save her, but also she, like, can't control him either. Like, he comes to save her from the pit, but then, like, she like, figures out how to ride him, but he's also just, like, burning everybody and, like, I don't know.
All right. So anyway, yeah. So she, you know, visits her little babies, but then she just leaves them locked up for now. So I don't know. She's going through some shit. It seems like she can't really do anything right now.
Mm-hmm. She's like figuring out how to queen, and she's like also figuring out how to dragon.
Like, right. And I mean, I think the problem is like she's already made some mistakes, and so she's having to like backtrack and sidestep and figure it out, and like rather than having done the right things from the top. So it's, you know, it's politics. It's not easy to figure out what the best move is always.
Yeah. And she's learning that her like impulsive decisions are not the best ones.
Okay. So then back at the wall, Johnny is like telling Mansi that he has to bend the knee. Mansi's like, no, I can't do that. And Johnny's like, you should maybe not have so much pride. And I'm like, it's not about that, dude. Like, it's not just pride. Like, he literally
believes in.
Yeah, it's like betraying his beliefs. It's not just like personal, like, oh, now I'm going to bend the knee, and that would be, you know, not a good look for me. No, it's not about that. It's what he believes in. It's what like all the people it's why the people following him are following him. Like, he can't. Yeah,
exactly. Because he said he'd never bend the knee to a Southern king, and he doesn't make them bend the knee to him.
Well, and John just doesn't understand the concept of freedom. He's not a good red-blooded American. He's all like about Nance. Like
freedom. Yeah, he's all about duty and honor and bullshit that I don't care about.
And then he's like, they're going to burn you alive. And Mance is like, it's a bad way to go, but it's better than betraying everything I believe. Yeah, and then Stannis gives Mance like one last chance to kneel. And Mance, he says, no, thank you. I forget the actor's name, but I think he does like an amazing job in these few scenes, like both in the scene where he's talking to Jon and in the scene where he's actually murdered. I just think like the emotion that you would actually be going through if that were happening to you, he like portrays it so well. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I don't know. He just like pulls you in emotionally and you connect with him, and it's, you like feel the terror and the sadness and everything he's going through. So props to him on acting that very well.
Yeah, no, he gives a great performance in this episode. I completely agree. Then Melisandre comes and does a big burn.
She gives like a big cult speech and starts burning him. And I hate it. And then she lights him on fire, and I hate it. And I hate it. And I hate it.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. And the wildlings are watching the free folk and thinking the same thing. They're like, what the fuck is this shit? The night boys are watching. They're like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah. And then Selyse is watching, and she's like, this is amazing. I love it. I have a boner.
She's like about to come. And then Jon Snow has had enough. So he's like, fuck this shit. And he very much just like makes that, like he like makes the sound and like a face that's just very much just like, fuck this shit. I've had enough of this. And he goes and gets his arrow, and he shoots Mance and gives him mercy.
And that's the end of episode one. So we're going to go right into episode two here, The House of Black and White. Which my first note from this episode was like the Snake Shack milk shark, because the first time I visited you in New York, you met me at Grand Central with Shake Shack, which you called Snake Shack, and you gave me a House of Black and White milk shark, which is actually just a black and white milkshake, I think. we were watching Game of Thrones, so that's what you called it.
Yeah, I called it the House of Black and White milkshake, because that's what it was. They made actual Game of Thrones milkshakes later in the last season. During the last season, Shake Shack had a dragon glass.
They did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Dragon glass shake. I went and got, they only had it for like a few days. When I went, they were like we're out of dragon glass. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. But it was like white chocolate and mint, I think. It was kind of like a shamrock shake. It was good. Yeah. And they had a Dothraki burger. But they weren't like that when I went. So I just got the dragon glass shake.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Arya has arrived in Braavos. The House of Black and White is very imposing, and they are not letting her in. She's like traveled all the way across the world. So I don't know. I just fucking love Arya, because like, she's not totally like, can you imagine being a kid and like, you're like, this is where I'm going to this house. And like, they're going to take my coin and everything will be great. And then they're like, no, go away.
Go away. Yeah.
And you're in like a new world and you don't know where you are. And she's just like, well, just go about living. So I'm like, you're cool.
Yeah. She's like, I have nowhere else to go. And he says, you have everywhere else to go, which is true, but also like, what the fuck?
But she just needs to prove that she's cool, I guess, before they let her in. So she'll be back. Brienne and Podrick once again randomly run into Sansa in the middle of nowhere. They're both like eating lunch in this inn, basically. And Podrick, of course, because he knows everyone, recognizes them. And then Brienne and Podrick have this great exchange where she's like, ready the horses. And he's like, we only have one horse.
One horse.
And she's like, get more.
Get another horse.
She thinks Sansa's going to go with them. But Sansa's like, obviously, very wary of strangers at this point, which like... she should be wary of Littlefinger, but...
yeah, like, fair, but she made the wrong choice.
Yeah. But, you know, they're headed north, so that seems good for her. It, of course, just isn't, but how would she know that? I mean, at least the people in the north aren't going to just fucking straight up kill her, so there's that. But, yeah, they say that she says she's not going to go with them, and then, of course, everyone's like, you know what? That means we all got to murder each other. That's the only next logical step. Like, we got to just kill. So they all start killing. Brienne and Podsy escape, and they kind of get separated. And then, you know, Podrick has no fucking idea how to ride a horse, but Brienne saves him, and Sansa fucks off with Peterfile. So that's how that ends.
Poor choices.
Poor life choices. All right, Cersei gets her little threat from Sunspear in the form of the little snake. They are big mad about...
ugh, this is so fucking
Oberyn.
I hate the Dorne plot line more than I hate any of these other plot lines.
Because... yeah, there's just a lot of plot lines. I just don't care.
Yeah, this was the first season that they kind of went off book because, like, the story they said was that they ran out of source material, which like isn't completely true.
Well, and they like bring in plot lines later from the books that like they could have been doing all along. Like,
yeah. And there's
Euron like Greyjoy stuff. And stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like stuff that there's a whole Dorne plot line in the books that like isn't this.
Yeah.
And the Dorne plot line in the books makes a lot more sense. So like, as we know on the show, what's her name? Ellaria Sand wants revenge for Oberyn's death. So she wants to kill Myrcella, and the Sand Snakes, who should be really cool but suck, are all in on it with her, and they want to kill Myrcella, which is true because like Oberyn said, like, we don't hurt little girls in Dorne. Like, this is the place that's not supposed to happen. In
yeah.
the books, they want to put her on the throne because the laws of succession are different in Dorne because they're cool there. So women can inherit property and titles.
Yeah.
So technically, like, Tommen is not next in line based on Dorne rules. Myrcella is. And that would make
right.
the Dornish prince that she's engaged to king. So in the books, the plot is to put Myrcella on the throne as queen. Way better plot.
Which is way more, yeah, it's way fucking more interesting.
More
it's
interesting.
Like more
makes more
tied
sense.
Into everything. Yeah.
It's better with what Oberyn had said about Dorne and then being like more progressive and then not
having
yeah. kids. And then also like the Prince of Dorne, I forget his name and the or the actor's name, but it's the actor from Star Trek Deep Space Nine who plays Dr. Bashir. But he's much older now, but I had seen him in Game of Thrones first, and then I went back during the quarantine. My husband's a big Trekkie, and we
watched. Is.
Yeah, he loves Star Trek. Deep Space Nine is his favorite. It's like the like, it's almost like the Rebel Star Trek. I feel like if that's nobody's favorite. It's like from the 90s. Yeah, Dr. Bashir on that show is played by the same actor, and then I like saw him younger after I'd seen him in Game of Thrones, and I was like, oh shit. So yeah, it's really cool that he's in this. He's a good actor. I wish he had more scenes. He's the one who like is sick. So he sits and watches the children at the fountains all day and not a creepy Peter Baelish way, just in like a, oh, I like seeing them playing and being happy.
Okay. Let's go to this great scene with Bronn and Lolly or Lawless or whatever the fuck her name is. Lawless. So yeah. So Bronn and Lawless are, you know, walking along and they're like talking about, she's like talking about their life together and he's like not listening because he doesn't care. And then Jaime Lannister shows up and he's like, guess what? You're not engaged to her anymore. You're re-engaged to somebody else because bigger castle and stuff. But in order to do that, you need to help me. And Bronn's like, fuck, fine. So then they're going to like fuck off to Dorne too to like go save Myrcella. Again, I just don't care that much, but at least Jaime's over there now because that makes it more interesting.
Should we do the Meereen?
Yeah, let's go to Meereen. Back to Meereen.
This is the whole thing. We're looking for the Sons of the Harpy. There's a guy last episode. We didn't talk about it because it doesn't matter. There's the Unsullied who was killed by the guy. They found the guy who killed the Unsullied. And Daenerys is trying to figure out what to do with him at this point. And
yeah.
the former slave who's like on her small council, says he's a slaver. He would have you back in chains. Like, we need to have him killed. Other people are naming other things. For some reason, Barristan's the only one who's like, how about a trial?
Yeah, he's like, what about a trial? Anyone ever heard of trials? Trials are good. And trials everyone's like, nah.
Should we kill him? Should we let him go? Should we make him food? And they're just, a trial. What about a trial?
Come on, you guys.
Nobody listens. But eventually Daenerys does listen and she wants a trial.
But it's too late because that guy takes, that slave, former slave guy takes justice into his own hands and kills him.
He does a big murder anyway. And he thinks Danny's going to be happy because he said, your hands were tied. You couldn't kill him, but I can. But she's fucking pissed because she's like, I didn't tell you to do that, motherfucker.
Yeah, so she's like, you did murder.
Murder bad. Murder needs to be punished. And then she murders him. And then...
Yeah, it seems like super stupid, though, that she did like a public execution of this guy because obviously all of the former slaves were like on his side and like... Mm-hmm. Just put him in prison for life or something, or like if you do have to kill him for murder, like then don't maybe have a public execution. I don't know.
Yeah, she obviously wants to make an example of him,
but it just turns all the people against her.
The people against her. It was the wrong choice, and this feels very similar to a scene we see either in the next episode or the one after with Jon Snow and Janos Slynt. And like, what is cool about this season with the Meereen plot and with what's going on with Jon Snow is they're sort of
parallels
in a lot of ways. Like, they're both kind of learning how to be rulers and learning the rules. And
yeah, almost like they were meant to end up together.
Anyway.
All right.
Yeah, so they all turn on her. They start hissing at her.
Yeah, that's weird. Don't like that. I forgot
that happened. And then they all riot. And she has to rush back. It's very violent. They're throwing rocks at her. And she goes back up and she's very sad. But then she has a visitor.
Yes, she does. We've skipped ahead, though, quite a bit here. I've got a couple other things I want to touch on before that. Okay, Cersei is, like, reviewing some dwarf heads because she has started a genocide of all dwarfs, apparently.
That sucks. All the dwarf heads.
Yeah, and then Qyburn also wants to experiment on the heads. He's like, oh, I won't let these go to waste. So they're like doing some real Nazi bullshit together. That's not cool. Like
part Dr. Frankenstein, part Nazi doctor bullshit.
Yeah, he for sure has lots of Nazi doctor bullshit vibes throughout all of his scenes in last season and then through the rest of his life.
But then he's also like trying to make zombies and things.
Yeah, which I mean, I feel like the Nazis would have done that too if they could have.
That's true. They probably tried.
Cersei inserts herself as the hand of the king until Tommen is old enough to name his own hand, which is like a bunch of bullshit. But she's just like, I am the politics now. Like,
and Kevin is like not having it. He's just like, no, child, I'm not taking orders from you. I'm going back to Casterly Rock.
Yeah, he's like, if I don't hear it from the king, it's not happening. But everyone else is kind of going with it, so then it doesn't really matter. You know, like, if everyone had banded with Kevin, like, maybe it would have worked out. But most of them are just like, yes, I will do whatever Cersei wants. Well, okay, Christine, actually, while we're here, do you want to pull Cersei into Dr. Christine's psychology corner?
Sure, let's do it.
She's, you know, always been a little bit of a her own individual kind of person throughout this show. But things are starting to go even more south for her recently, especially with like the death of her father and her oldest son. Obviously, she's going to continue to develop as a character into like some even darker areas. So we might have to pull her back into Psychology Corner later. But let's talk about where she's at right now.
Yeah. So where she's at right now, she's just here. Let me think for a second.
I mean, she's going through a lot of grief, obviously. She's gone through a lot of like inappropriate things that are now public knowledge, like fucking her brother mainly. So I think there's a lot of like shit on her plate.
Yeah, I think in this season, she's just really going through. I think it's grief is like a good way to put it, but it's grief for a lot of things. Like, it's grief for her, like quite literal grief for her father and for her son. But at the same time, it's like grief for her position in society. Like, she's really just like losing grasp on everything that she had.
She's lost a ton of status, and she's like, obviously we just talk about her trying to like insert herself as the head of the small council. She's like doing whatever she can to grab status back.
Yeah. And she just can't take it. She's lost her status as queen. You know, there's a lot of jealousy that comes up when she sees Marjorie. Not only like there's a scene after their wedding where she walks over and Marjorie's having brunch or something. I'm calling it brunch because it looks like
girls brunch.
Having girls brunch with like all her handmaidens and joking around about the king. And Marjorie's like really passive aggressive with her and says, I forget, what should I call you? Queen Mother or Dowager Queen? And it just shows like Cersei's really all alone. Like she doesn't have any friends. You know, she sent Jaime away. Her father's gone. Tommen is just like taken with Marjorie. And here Marjorie is like, you know, this younger, more beautiful queen who's just very more beautiful in the eyes of, I don't know, that's the way that she's set up. Like they're both gorgeous actresses, so that's bullshit. But like here's this young, beautiful queen. She's got all these friends. Like she has the love of the people, things that Cersei doesn't really have at this point. And I think she's just very stuck on that prophecy from childhood too, and like doing whatever she can to avoid it. Like she's just very caught up in what she's lost and like just trying to like grasp, like very defensive of what she has and not trying to lose it. And I think that's why she like allies with the wrong people in this season. And she like, the way that she's maneuvering and conniving in this season is not what we've seen before. Like in the past, it's like Cersei's the best of the best. Like she knows how to manipulate people. She knows how to get 10 steps ahead of them and get what she wants. And in this season, she really makes really bad choices with the militant and arming them. And like, it comes back to bite her in the ass, but it's so clear the whole time that it's going to, but she's just like so blinded by her grief that she's just making these desperate decisions just to try to like get ahead of everyone without really thinking it through at this point.
Yeah, I feel like this entire season just constantly feels like she's grasping at straws and like coming up empty-handed.
Yeah, and I think there's like a feminist statement to make here too. Like if we want to go from like a sociological perspective of like how like her status was so feeble and dependent on the men in her lives and her life, like as much as like she rose to power and she put herself there and she kept herself in power and she was able to manipulate.
She had real power while she was in that position too.
Exactly. And now it's like just because her son married someone else and then her father died. It's gone. Like it's just very fleeting. Like that women are just like so disposable in this society. And it's, I think she's right. Like,
yeah. And there's been like, especially I think more in last season too, but there was a lot of talk of like Tywin wanted Jaime to like leave the Kingsguard to become the heir to Casterly Rock. And then like Tyrion was like, maybe I should be that. And Tywin was like, no, I hate you. And like Cersei's not even a consideration because she's a woman. And there's just like all this patriarchal bullshit going on around her. So like, yeah, it's very dependent on everyone else in her life. Like she can't make her own way if these other men like don't do what they need to do to make that happen anymore. Right.
And I like in the books, I feel like she does go through like more of like a gender. I'm not like gender dysphoria, like with her gender identity, but like a lot of like depression related to her gender and her station in life. And at one point she like takes like a woman lover in the books, which we don't see on the show. And but like the way that it's described, it's not necessarily that she's like queer and like into it. It's that like she wants to be a man. Like she wants to like have a lover in the way that a man would and to be dominant.
Yeah.
In that
not
way.
Necessarily that she wants to be a man as like we would think of in our real world, like transsexual sort of way, but like she wants to experience what males experience in her world.
Yeah. Like she wants like the power that comes with masculinity. And it's interesting. Like we see her like starting to dress more masculine too, as the seasons go on. Like she wears like,
yeah. So it's, there's like some of that that comes through in the show, not as much as the books for sure, but yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's just, it's a lot of grief. And I think she's like exploring a lot related to her gender. Not once again, not in the way that we would think about like exploring your gender identity, but just like the way that like her station is tied so much to her gender and just really starting to resent that and trying to find ways to get around it. So that's not necessarily a diagnosis, but it's kind of an analysis of like what I think's going on.
What she's going through. Yeah.
She's just very sad in this season too. Like there's not the scenes where she talks to Marjorie and to Tommen, like that, like that spark isn't there. And even when she like,
yeah, she's kind of lost her like bad bitch attitude, even though she starts to like you said, be more masculine and like dress more badass and stuff. Like she has lost that, like, I am a bad bitch and I know how great I am kind of thing.
Yeah. She's just kind of like losing her identity here and like, not sure where she fits in King's Landing and in the world in the same way that kind of Tyrion is too. I think like all the Lannisters, when Tywin died, that family kind of collapsed and now they're all kind of figuring out like, where do I fit into this world without just like following what daddy tells me to do all the time. And I think for Cersei too, with like losing her father and her son and then her other son marrying off, her daughter's far away. So like the other way that she's always identified is as a mother. And now she's kind of, Tommen kind of wants her to leave. Like, so he can have a little bit of independence, and Joffrey's dead and Marcella's far away.
I think too, she's like trying to fill her father's shoes to some extent. Like part of that is like what we were talking about with her just trying to figure out how to like have that kind of masculine power in Westeros. Mm-hmm. But also it's like, well, neither of her brothers fucking stepped up to the plate. So like she is the only one who's like kind of interested in House Lannister anymore at this point. And she's like, well, let me figure out a way to do that, because he's gone and like someone needs to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like she's concerned about his legacy and like doing the things that he once did.
All right. Well, guess what? It's time to pick a new Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Who wants to be the next Lord Commander of the Night's
Watch? The 998th Lord Commander, which is a fucking lot.
It's a lot of Lord Commanders.
Yeah. Like I was thinking about like the number of presidents and like how far back into history that goes. And they're not even like serving for life like these dudes. So I'm like, this is a very long time, which like we know the Night's Watch is supposed to like extend forever back into like distant memory and no one even like knows. So Alistair Thorne, like, I don't understand how so many people do vote for him after John is brought up as an option, because like, he's kind of a dick. And by kind of, I mean, he's a huge fucking dick. I know he has some friends, but like, it seems like the majority of the Night Boys at this point are the younger people who would be more into Jon Snow, but I don't know.
Yeah, I just thought he had like his own little clique and posse who are like always going to vote for him no matter what.
Yeah, but there's like, they're tied. It's not like it's a few people who vote for him. But
that's true. Anyway. And then Maester Aemon is the tie-breaking vote, and he's so cute how he like pulls it out of his pocket like, oh, I have one.
Yeah, I love it. So yeah, Jon Snow becomes the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. And we're all like, fuck yeah, Johnny, go Johnny. So back to, you know, let's hop back over the Narrow Sea. Arya is still wandering around Braavos. Some dickwads want her sword. And she's like, they're like, you know, that might be worth something. And she's like, nothing is worth anything to dead men. And that's when the House of Black and White dudes, the faceless men, are like, you know what, we're ready for you.
I like what she just said. You can come play with us now. You can sit with us.
Yeah, so it's like Jack and Hagar, but also somebody else, but also no one, because that's how the faceless men work. We're getting a little intro to that. And then they're like, that's who a girl must become, no one. And she's like, fuck yeah, I'm in. Yeah, so she's into the House of Black and White. And then I had a note here that like, I do like this plot line. It takes a little while to become like super fun, but I do like the House of Black and White plot line for sure.
I agree. I think that's like one of the best parts. It is slow moving, but
it's slow. Yeah, slow moving for a while, but then it's like, it's really cool. Oh, okay. So at the very end of this scene, Dany is like up on the roof contemplating her decisions, which like have led to some bad shit. And then fucking Drogon flies up and he's so big. He leaves, but she's not a dragon rider yet. But yeah, he comes back and we're like happy to see him. And
yeah, he just shows, it's like he like comes over and he's like, what's up? And she's like, Drogon, you're here. And then he's like, okay, bye.
Yeah. So she's like not back in control of him yet or anything. But I feel like this is just like a little reminder of who she is and like a little spark of hope for her. We don't really get to like a turning point for Dany in these 5 episodes, so we've got a little bit of time to go. But I feel like this is just like a good reminder for her, like, you are a dragon.
Yeah, and it's like when she's feeling really low, it's after she kind of fucked up and everyone turned on her. And then it kind of brightens her day because he's here and she hadn't seen him in weeks and he comes back, but then he leaves again. So it's just kind of like, it's almost like symbolizing like, this is who you are, this is where you're headed, but like, you're not there yet.
We're not there yet. Yeah. All right. But yeah, that's the end of episode two. So like, so right into episode three, High Sparrow. My first note was just Cupid's Sparrow. Yeah. But Arya is at the House of Black and White. She's doing chores. There's a lot of like mystery and darkness involved in this. I think like, despite this being a little bit of a slow moving plot in the beginning of it, I was so intrigued the first time watching it because I was like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Like, what the fuck is going on in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just a lot of mystery with it. And we don't really like know, like the people are coming in and dying and like drinking the water. And then like, what are they doing with the bodies? But yeah, I thought this was probably like, I try to reflect on like my first experience watching all of this as we're doing this rewatch. And I feel like this was probably something that was even more interesting the first time I watched it, just because I didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Oh, for sure. And it's like so creepy and weird and different from like anything we've seen so far.
Which we like to an extent, other than like Peter Files.
A vaguely creepy Marjorie and Tommen get married in this episode and they bang. And I think Tommen's like,
yeah, how the fuck old is Tommen supposed to be? Because like we talked about this in the last episode that we did. If we're going on the ages of other people, like Sansa, we don't even know if she's maybe 18 yet in this season.
Well, we knew she and was, like, she was 14 when she married Tyrion.
Yeah.
So then, like, Tommen can't be older than 14 now.
No, for sure. Because, like, think back to season one when we have all these characters, these children in the same place at Starkyland, fucking Winterfell.
Starkyland!
And, like, think how much younger Tommen's a baby and Sansa's, like,
yeah.
11 or something at that point.
Like, he's at least, like, Bran's age, if not Rickon's age.
Yeah, he's one of the youngest ones there. So there's no fucking way he's at all an adult. So yeah, this is gross.
They changed the actor, and I feel like part of it was for this plot. Like, the actor playing Tommen now, as we said before, is the actor who played like one of the like Lannister boys that the Karstarks kill.
Yeah,
and he's a little bit older than the original actor, so I feel like they wanted it to be like, look, he's grown up now, but like it's not consistent with the other characters' ages.
Yeah, and like it's clear that Margaery is supposed to be several years older than him, so
grown woman.
And like she
was married to the other guy before, who was like on the small council, yeah, and stuff.
Like sweet and likable and stuff as Margaery is, she's definitely like so predatory with Tommen. So that makes it a little nastier.
Because she wants to rule, so it's easy to rule when like,
yeah,
the similar to like what we were saying about Cersei, like the only way she can be in power is if her connection to a man. And if that man, mm-hmm, is like this, like very pliable, manipulatable boy, like that makes it.
Yeah.
And easier for her, especially as someone who's like gorgeous and flirty and knows how to play the game. And it's kind of,
well, and then after this episode, he's like totally pussy whipped. So she like is in the perfect position where she wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that was her goal all along. And she even in this scene tries to get him to like manipulate him into like getting Cersei to leave by saying things like,
oh, yeah, yeah. She's like, doesn't your mom miss being at Casterly Rock? Blah, blah, blah.
Where she's from. Yeah. And like, as long as you're here, she'll never let you out of her sight. You'll always be her little boy. And meanwhile, mm-hmm, he's just like, but I'm a man. I'm a man. I want to.
But he's also a child. So that's weird. yeah, this is that scene where you talked about where they're like having ladies brunch, girls, mm-hmm, brunch, where you talked about it, blah, blah, blah. Let's go back up to the north. The Bolte boys are rebuilding Winterfell. There are a bunch of actual like flayed skinless bodies hanging up. Can you guys stop fucking flaying people?
Stop flaying people.
And Ramsay's all proud of it. He's like, I flayed them while they were alive. And it's this because they didn't pay their fucking taxes. Chill the fuck out, Ramsay.
Chill out, Ramsay.
So yeah, then they're like, listen, we got to hold the north. How about you get married? And then we, you know, do a little quick scene cut to Sansa. And we're all just suddenly like, oh no, fuck this. This is bad. Because it is.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate that she marries him so much.
Yeah. And Sansa like realizes at this point, she's like, oh my God, the marriage proposal you were talking about was for me. Fuck, 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 fuck. It's just like, this has been her life for like the last decade, has been like continually promised to be married to people. And it's horrible.
Once again, because like that's what happens when you're a woman in this world. You just get like passed around.
I'm kind of surprised that Littlefinger didn't rape her.
Really?
Yeah, because like he like has full control of her. He's about to pass her off to Ramsay. He's obviously in love with her. She looks like her mom. I guess it's just because he does not fuck.
Yeah.
Except for that one time when he fucked Liza.
I don't think he would rape. I think he might manipulate her into like wanting him.
Yeah. Or yeah. I don't know. It's just like,
you know?
Yeah. I guess I'm just surprised with like what they were doing with all the shit on this show. Like the fact that he like kind of has her trust and all this shit. I'm just sort of surprised they didn't do anything more inappropriate here. No, but
he's definitely thank God just like grooming her.
But thankfully, that's all that happens between them. So,
yes.
All right. Back at Castle Black, Snarky Narg, he's Lord Commander. He's like, hey, Ollie, let's have you be my steward. And then Stannis is like, listen. He like really wants Snarg to get involved in like the politics of the Seven Kingdoms. And I'm just like, dude, he's not going to do that. He took a vow and he likes to take vows very seriously.
Yeah. Like if he was going to abandon his vows, he would have done it to be with Ygritte, who he actually loved, not Stannis, who just like fucking showed up and is creepy.
Right. And like at one point he had offered to make him a Stark. And he like, even for that, he's like, no, I'm not doing it. No, I took a fucking vow. He is the shield that guards the realms of men.
And now he's
that's what Lord he's about. Commander. Lord Commander. So back with Arya, she is trying to stop being Arya Stark. She has to get rid of all of her things and like lose her name. Needle. Yeah, she can't let go of Needle. My note here just says Needle in a rock stack. Because she hides it in a stack
needle
of rocks.
In a rock stack. Nice. She hide.
We like start to get some of the more creepy stuff in the House of Black and White with like the bodies and all that stuff.
She bodies.
Yeah, she gets to go down to like the body basement for the first time. I don't know why the Waif is like so mean to her. Like what? Why?
I don't even know. Like why is the Waif?
Just like, I don't know.
Like what's the point of the Waif?
I don't know. That's like the slow, boring part of this plotline. I'm still like into it and stuff, but yeah, the Waif I'm kind of just like, eh. And then, like I said, Sansa is back at Winterfell finally for the first time in 5 seasons, and it's Ramsay, and everything sucks except the North remembers.
The North remembers. Yeah, she kind of like I hate this plotline for her so much because like in this episode she like kind of has some level of power, like is this one where Miranda gives her a bath and is like trying to threaten her. No, that's way later.
I think that's later.
No, but this is where Miranda takes her to meet Reet. Sorry.
So yeah, she brings her into the kennels, and I think that's actually a little later too, but we'll skip to it. She brings her into the kennels and like she meets Reek, and Reek doesn't want to be who he used to be. They don't really like show Sansa's reaction to that very much, but you have to imagine that's a weird reaction for her.
Because it's like, this is this person you grew up with who you now hate because you think he killed your brothers and he just like destroyed your home and betrayed your other brother. And now he's like this like horribly tortured, basically like whipped dog who's like literally sleeping in the kennels.
But then it like immediately cuts from that scene to a scene where they're like having dinner and Reek is like serving them. And it's clear that I assume it's clear to her at that point who made Reek and she's engaged to that guy. Yeah. So, I mean, I think her guard is up around everyone at this point in her life, and she, like, thinks everyone is probably bad. So I think she's a little more prepared for Ramsay to be bad than she would have been for anyone else, having, you know, dealt with Joffrey and everything in her life. But he's obviously worse than anyone else we've met on this show, so.
He's so much worse, for sure.
Yeah.
But, like, even in this, like, the Walda says like, oh, it must be odd for you being here in a strange place. And she goes, it's not a strange place. This is my home. It's the people who are strange.
Yeah. I love that line.
So good. Like she's just very like badass and like this episode and like,
yeah,
you know, we just saw
she definitely like, so I mean, we've talked about her character progression and she like definitely like knows who the fuck she is at this point and like has a clear understanding of, you know, what she wants in life and how the world works and all of that stuff, which has taken her a long time to get to that point, but she's there now.
And that's why I just like hate seeing her just be like raped and tortured and just like put back in that traumatic place in this season. It's so unfair.
Yeah, it's stupid. Let's go back up and talk about Johnny, because this is that scene with John kind of like doling out all of his responsibilities for the Night's Watch boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like a really good call that he like kind of gives like a respectful position to Alistair Thorne. Obviously, like Alistair Thorne is kind of like a whip dog at this point, or like a Alistair Thorne is kind of like beat at this point, and like to like kick a dog while it's down would be a bad call. It would definitely like make him worse. So I think that's kind of what Alistair Thorne is expecting, but John is like, no, I'm gonna like give you like a good rank and everything. I think it was a bad call though to do the same thing for Janna Slynn, because like while Alistair Thorne sucks, he's like done some good things too, or like has respect or whatever. But Janos Flint totally sucks. Like, he has no redeeming qualities. And obviously, he doesn't have any respect for Jon Snow or even for the Night's Watch in general. So he doesn't, like, take this well.
Yeah, so he freaks the fuck out. He says, you can take your order and shove it up your bastard ass or arse. Mm-hmm. So this is the scene that I said really parallels the scene with Dany, where Jon Snow... you know, he disobeys an order, and then he gets his sword. And since, you know, he passed the sentence, he swings the sword. And at the end, Janna says, okay, I'll go wherever you want me to. I'm just really afraid. Like, please don't kill me. And he kills him anyway, which I feel like is a mistake. Like, it's just sending all the wrong messages.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, there's already this, like, kind of gray area attitude toward John because of, like, how he might like the wildlings because they might be people or whatever.
Yeah, shocking. And I mean, he only won by one vote, so there's like half the people there like don't see him as the Lord Commander, and to just like kill one of those people is kind of, I know he was trying to be like, yeah, well, I am the Lord Commander whether you like it or not, fuck you, but
yeah,
at the same time, like, he ends up dying in a mutiny from these people, so I think you know, this is, in addition, it is mostly what happened with the wildlings and like how he shows mercy to them. But I think the fact that he's showing mercy to the wildlings and he didn't show mercy to Janna Slynn, like, does end up hurting him in the future.
Yep. Yeah. He should have probably showed mercy to him there. But Stannis has like a huge boner for him because he likes murder and like hardcore justice like this. So he's very into this. All right. So let's get back over across the Narrow Sea to Tyrion, because we haven't talked about him for a little bit. Him and Varys are still like traveling in their little litter box across the east, across Essos. They're in Volantis at this point, and Tyrion is like, fuck this, I'm done being in this little box. Let me get out and go explore Volantis for a little bit. So guess who, you know what, Volantis, Christine, full of slaves. Guess who's hanging out here?
Jorah, because he loves slaves.
Jorah, yeah. He's like, slave city, this is the place for me.
In a brothel with a sex worker who looks like Daenerys, because he's a disgusting, gross stalker man.
He's gross. Fuck him. There's like a red priestess in Volantis who is like, Daenerys is our Lord and Savior, and we're like, all right, maybe we're into the red god. Yeah, Jorah's there. And then, of course, Jorah is like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to steal Tyrion. So that's how this episode...
to the queen. So he thinks, Tyrion thinks he's going to kill him and take his head to Cersei, but he...
Right, because Cersei has this bounty on his head. So, of course, he thinks that.
But we know that he means Daenerys, which is where he's going anyway, so...
But Jorah's Jorah, so... Episode 4, Sons of the Harpy... my first note, of course, is Jorah is a dick. So right back where we left off there. He steals a fisherman's boat. I'm so fucking over him. That's one where Dany probably shouldn't have had mercy. She should have just fucking killed him, but oh well.
Kill him.
All right, Bronn and Jaime are meanwhile headed to Dorne, and they pass the Sapphire Isle, Tarth. And Jaime has like a little bit of a little reminiscent moment. He's like, oh, Tarth, I know someone from there. I know this girl from there. Bronn basically says that he knows Marcella is not Jaime's niece, but he's like trying to get Jaime to say it, and he like won't.
He's like, we have to rescue my niece. Your niece?
Yeah.
Niece.
Yeah, so they are on their way there. Oh, well, this is the scene though. I mean, we already talked about Melisandre being thirsty, but this is the scene where she like actually like gets naked for Johnny. And she's like, maybe we should, you know, fuck, like, hey, have you seen boobs? I have boobs. Because she can't be around people without getting naked. And I'm just like, can you fucking stop, dude?
And he's just not into it. He says he loves another. And she said, like, love is for the living. She's dead. And he's like,
but I still love her. Yeah. Poor Johnny.
Maybe also, he should have like not betrayed her and gone back to the Night's Watch then.
He doesn't want to be raped by a red goddess.
No, he does not want a shadow baby.
Not everyone wants you, Melisandre. That's not how the world works. We all know someone like that, but
this is true.
Yeah, and then she says to Snarg, you know nothing, Jon Snow. Thoughts? Why does she know this? Why does she say this to him?
Now she knows things, I guess. I don't know.
Does she know that Ygritte used to say this? Because it's like a weird saying. I mean, it doesn't seem to have any like connection, but also other than for like us, the viewers, but
that's more what it seems.
So I do want to talk about then there's a scene. We're still at the wall. There's a scene with Shireen. Her parents are the worst. And Stannis is telling. So Stannis talks about her grayscale, which like becomes a thing, obviously, in these episodes and like kind of for the rest of the show. But he is like talking about how he tried to save her. And this is probably like the nicest conversation that he's ever had with her. And it makes me wonder why he's saying like, because he's going to kill her soon. It seems like he's being sincere here. So I'm like, does he like really feel this way about her? Like, does he still really love his daughter? Or is he like saying this because he's like doing the lead a lamb to slaughter and like make her feel comfortable kind of thing because he knows he's gonna like murder her soon? Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, like how Melisandre like tried to seduce Gendry first.
Yeah, like is it that, or like does he legit not know that she's gonna be killed soon and like changes his mind over the next couple episodes?
I think he changes his mind over the next couple episodes. Like, I always thought like he meant it, and this is just showing like how much he really did care for his daughter and that. Yeah. His desire to be king and his like fanaticism, just that's how bad it got that like it's she's yeah. not disposable to him. It's not just like, oh, I'll burn whoever. It got so bad that he would like, that's why he's Stannis, because it was the same with like Thanos, where like he actually did care for Gamora, but just like cared about his like Infinity Stone bullshit more and was like willing to sacrifice her. Like, I feel like it's the same vibes. Yeah.
Okay, we have to go to the crypts in Winterfell because Sansa's there with her family, and then Peter File walks in. He's being a big creeper, but we got to talk about Lyanna a little bit here, which we thought was going to turn into something. Yes, we were all like back when this was actually on, because like the books still haven't confirmed all of this for us where they left off. There's like a lot of it in there, but not everything. What comes of it, I guess, isn't in there too, which isn't also in the show because they started to do this and then forgot about it, I guess. But yeah, they start talking about Lyanna, and we were all like obsessed at the time about R plus L equals J, which is Rhaegar plus Lyanna equals Jon Snow.
Which because... R plus L does equal J, it just didn't matter. Like, just reveal it and then they didn't do anything with it.
Exactly. But we were all like very excited every time Lyanna came up at this point when the show was on, because we were like, oh my God, we're going to find out about R plus L equals Jack.
Yay.
So this was very exciting at the time.
Yeah. Cause the implication here, like Sansa shares, like, cause he said like the whole war started because Rhaegar chose your sister and not his wife. And then she goes, oh yeah, she chose her. He chose her. He kidnapped her and raped her.
His aunt, like, her aunt.
Her aunt.
Yeah.
Did I say sister? Oh no.
Aunt Lyanna. It's sister. Okay.
Aunt Lyanna. And then Littlefinger kind of has like, I don't remember what he says, but like, he just like, kind of implies like, did he though? Like, you know?
Yeah. Cause, Sansa says that like she was kidnapped and raped, and Littlefinger's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Like implies that maybe it was consensual.
Yeah, of course. Like this means that Jon is a Targaryen, and like, basically, you know, we've gone through the like 5 seasons of this show with like Dany being the only Targaryen in the world besides Maester Aemon. Mm-hmm. And we're like slowly finding out that Jon might be a Targaryen too, which should be something that they should do a lot with in the end of this show. So that's definitely going to happen. Just kidding. But yeah, it was very exciting at the time.
Yeah, because like he's the only one that can have a baby with her because they're a hybrid species.
Yes, because they're part dragon. Littlefinger also tells Sansa that she's the last surviving Stark in this scene, which is not true at all, but nobody knows that at this point. Actually, only one of her siblings has died.
Yeah, like the rest of them are alive.
Okay, so Dany in this episode, looking very Westerosi, very hot. Barristan is talking to her about Rhaegar. So we get more like R plus L equals J shit.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's like right after. So we learn a lot about Rhaegar in this episode.
Barristan's basically talking about how nice he was and how he used to like sing and play music and kind of just like showing her, like, you know, she only knows like the brutal side of her family history from her brother, like, because he was a brutal asshole. And like Barristan's like, well, there are these always also like more gentle, like good things in your family too. And like, mm-hmm. you can relate to those as well. So it seems like Barristan's going to be a really good influence on her. Of course, he immediately dies right after this. So
yeah, like the next scene.
Yeah. So the harpies are, they murder him and Grey Worm is also injured. And that's basically how the episode ends. I don't
know why they killed him off, because he doesn't die in the books. And I remember like reading that the actor was really pissed about it. Like the actor didn't want to leave the show and thought that
Barristan wasn't supposed to die. Yeah.
Yeah. Thought that Barristan still had like more important things to do. So I don't know why.
It seemed like he did. Like he should have helped Dany like through her growth in this season and like helped prepare her to take the Iron Throne, which she should have done.
Yeah, I guess they just did that to clear the way for Tyrion on the
We're
show.
We're just falling off the rails at this point, but
yeah,
it's all beginning to crumble slowly.
Yeah, but I feel like it was because they knew Tyrion was going to go and she needed counsel, and it would make, like, I guess it's more meaningful for her to have counsel from Tyrion if she doesn't already have someone else from Westeros there.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, could have gotten, she, like, listen to a Lannister. I don't know. Still stupid.
The last episode we're going to talk about today is episode 5, Kill the Boy. Start off where we left off, dead Barristan, very sad. I don't know why fucking Hisdar is always here. I don't care about him either. You also don't, apparently.
Okay, no. Okay. Sorry, I thought you were about to say the next thought, so I was just waiting.
Oh, no, I was waiting for you to say something. So Dany does get a little weird here, because this is the scene where she like takes the guys down into the dragon cellar and she's like, hey, I don't know who's guilty, but maybe one of you guys should just fix this. And otherwise I'm going to feed you all to my dragons. Not the coolest thing for her to do.
No, but she's like trying to show her strength and her power and be like, don't fuck with me.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but
she's using the dragons without like having them loose where they could hurt innocents, because even when she's being brutal and horrible, she still doesn't want to hurt innocents.
Yeah.
Slavers.
Well, so this is this. So back up at the wall, this is a scene where Snarginarg asks Tormund, he's like, can we make peace so that you can save your people? And like, this is, I think, again, we're like drawing these parallels between him and Dany. And like, this is kind of, I think, where he's making a different decision than her in terms of like, can we find a compromise?
Yeah, exactly.
Which they do. And obviously, that's an interesting thing, because like, I think he, you know, is a little bit more on like the side of the underdog and like is trying to make this relationship work a little bit more than Dany is, and yet they both are still like not good, like no one likes them for it either way,
and trying to figure it out.
So it turns out bad for both of them, but
yeah, this is how Jon Snow loses a lot of friends, especially people who weren't a big fan of him to begin with, because it's when he says he's going to let the wildlings go south of the
wall. He's going to let them down across the wall. And like, even his friends are mad about it. Like no one likes it.
But he has a point where he's just like, we're either going to, you know, if they go north of the wall, they're going to die. And then we're going to be fighting them as zombies. So I'd rather be allied with them living.
Which like obviously isn't his only reason for saving them. But like, I think that's a good appeal to the people who are opposed to him, at least.
Yeah, like it makes logical sense that it's like if less people become zombies, that when the zombies attack, then you're good.
We have another scene later in this episode with Grey Worm and Missandei. And I think we talked about this before the first time they were flirting, how Grey Worm is like incredibly serious and like shoots his shot. Luckily it fucking works out for him because she likes him too, but like, he's very stern.
He really is. I forgot, like, earlier in this season too, like when she finds out that the Unsullied was killed in the brothel, she goes to Grey Worm and she's like, why would he go to the brothel if he's Unsullied? And the Grey Worm's like, I do not know. But it seems like she's just like, hey, are you guys like interested in women? Do you do the sex? No reason. Asking for a friend.
Yeah. But then they make out in this scene. So pretty great. Yes.
They make out. Yeah, I was wrong. The last episode I said I didn't think anything happened between them for a long time, but that's not
true. Yeah, no, it's now. Danny does decide in this episode that she's going to open Fight Club again, but just with no slaves. So at least she's like trying to figure it out. Again, the whole point of this season with Danny and Maureen is like her learning from her mistakes and like figuring out a better way to do things. Or so we thought.
Yeah, so it's like free men can choose to fight if they want for money. She still thinks it's barbaric. She doesn't want to watch people fight to the death. Because she doesn't like people dying, I guess.
And also in the same breath, she says she's going to get married to Hisdar so that she can like form an alliance with a strong house from Marine to like solidify her being, you know, a part of their culture.
Which is so stupid to me because it's like marriage feels so permanent. Like it doesn't actually happen on the show, but like marriage is so permanent. And like if her end goal is Westeros, like why do you want to like go to Westeros with like a Marinese king?
I mean, she was going to go there with a call.
I know, but she actually like loved him. And she also didn't have a choice whether or not to marry him the first.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely a sense that like, I don't think Hisdar would ever have been like someone who would try to oppose her. Like she would have for sure been the one in power you know, in their marriage, which isn't a bad way for her to go into Westeros either, because like being married, but being the one in charge, just like similar to what we're talking about with Margaery and Cersei. Yeah. That's the only way for them to like continue to, cause she could have easily gone to Westeros single and then married like, you know, a Littlefinger or someone horrible.
Well, that's what she like broke up with Dario so that when she got to Westeros, she would like have options of like marriage alliances.
But in this episode, it seems more like she is like choosing to do that for Hisdar instead, to like make an alliance here.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the thing. I just like, it didn't seem like a good move. If like her end goal is Westeros, she should want to like be available to marry someone in Westeros in a few years.
Yeah. Now, this is where we got to talk about Tyrion and Jorah. They are in Valyria. So I was very excited rewatching this because we obviously are going to see like the Valyrians in House of the Dragon. And this is like pre the fall of Valyria. Is this the same people? I'm always a bit confused about that.
Yeah. Well, like Valyria was like pre when they came to Westeros. So there was like a bunch of,
but those are the people descended from that area, correct?
Yeah. So like the Targaryens were like one of like the big houses of Valyria.
And the Valyrians as well.
No,
right?
Oh, the Valari and the
Valyrians. Are they from there too?
So like everyone else died. So like,
it was
like,
okay, well then cut all this.
Yeah. Like everybody in old Valyria had the dragons. And then in the Doom, like there was like a seer in the Targaryen family who like saw that something bad was going to happen. And they believed her, and the Targaryens escaped to Dragonstone before the
Doom. So like this still is maybe something that's kind of tied to our new show though, because like,
it's the
ancestral home of the Targs.
And it's where the dragons came from, where somebody fucked a dragon.
And then, of course, to make it, like, all the more magical, Drogon flies over. And this is definitely, like, one of those scenes where I'm like, oh, my God. You can, like, feel the feelings that Tyrion is experiencing, seeing a real-life dragon for the first time in his life. And, like, not a small one. Drogon's a big boy now.
Big boy. Yeah. And just the look on his face is, like, amazing.
Yeah. I mean, being in the place that they are, too, like, it's awesome.
Yeah, and nobody like know like what was the doom of Valyria?
Yeah, we don't know. I don't know if that's like anything that we will find out any more about in House of the Dragon. Maybe not, but yeah, we don't really know.
The way that it's described made me wonder like if it was like a volcano or something, and they just like didn't know what to call that. Because it sounded like fire, like they blamed it on their like, oh, it was because of the dragons, and then it was like dark magic, and it seemed
we don't know
with fire, and then it like made everything not livable, and no one could, and they all died. So it made me think, I'm like, was it like a Pompeii situation?
Yeah, except it's like still standing and still there. So it's just it's just a creepy little mystery, and I want to know more.
I want to know more too. But now it's where all the stone men live, like the people.
Yeah, so they just start fucking popping up too and grabbing onto the boat. And so, yeah, Tyrion finally, I think, gets saved by Jorah. He like falls into the water and stone men are trying to like grab him. Jorah saves him. Jorah then does this fucking bullshit thing, which reminded me of the Halloween party episode from Community where they have like the zombies and Jorah is pretending to not be bit, but he's bit. And by that, I mean like touched by a stone man.
Yes. And he hides his bite until, like the stupid doctor in Community.
Yeah. Dr. Rich Chiquita MD.
Yes. Have you watched Zombo on Hulu?
No, I haven't. Is it good?
It's great. It's only one season. It's like a British zombie show. And the idea is that they like decide to ride one of those houseboats. So it's like very slow moving. So the zombies are just like following them, but they can't get to them because of the water. And it's a comedy. I don't know.
That's awesome. But yeah, Jorah basically like finishes this episode up knowing that his days are numbered. He's hiding his grayscale from Tyrion, but basically like, I don't know. I mean, I think this is a sort of pivotal moment because he's already obviously obsessed with Daenerys. But I think this, because he has this like impending death, basically, I think he maybe becomes a slightly less shitty person for it. I still hate him, but
yeah, he does sort of redeem himself a little bit post grayscale.
He's been horrible and the worst for 5 seasons though, so he can only redeem himself so much in my eyes.
Yeah, I feel like later he gets better. Right now he still sucks.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about too, like with rewatching this, how much less we like we already hated him. And we like him even less now that we're like, why is he this obsessed with slaves?
He just thinks slavery's fine.
Yeah, not cool, Jorah. So that is all we've got for today, Christine.
Oh, wow, that went quick.
I mean, not our favorite 5 episodes. So, you know, I think we skipped a few things, but maybe we should jump into some fuck, marry, kill. Do you have any?
Yeah, I can do one.
Okay.
So let's do Danny Prospect. So let's do.
That's what I was about to start writing down. I just wrote down his. Okay, go for it.
His Darzo Lorak, Dario Naharis, and Khal Drogo.
Okay.
I mean, it's easy to kill.
Hizdar, Khal Drogo, and Dario. Yeah. Okay. So obviously you just kill Hizdar and fuck Dario and marry Khal Drogo.
So, like, what she does. Yep.
Yeah. Pretty fucking straightforward.
Perfect.
Okay. How about Cersei, Alaria Sand from this season, and Solis?
I like you said from this season, because, like, Alaria was actually cool last season. So I'm going to kill Solis, because I'm not going near that. I'll marry Cersei. Because, I don't know, there's probably some benefits to that power-wise. And she's pretty hot. And I'll fuck Alaria because she seems like she's been with a lot of ladies and probably knows what she's doing.
Fair.
How about, no, just joking, Rhaegal, Viserion, and Drogon. If you were an old Targaryen.
Okay. An old school Targaryen, or if I were a dragon, this reminds me of that episode. This reminds me of that episode of Broad City where Alana's talking about how hot some of the dogs are. And Abby's like, are you talking about that dog? She's like, I obviously mean if I was a dog.
Yes. There's one John Oliver too. He was just like, that's a fuckable horse. I'm not saying I'd fuck a horse, but if I was a horse.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Drogon is like the one who stands out, and the other two are kind of the same for me. So I would marry Drogon, and then yeah. It's a coin toss with the other two to me, I guess.
It's like marrying Drogo, but very fair.
Okay, one more from me. Davos Seaworth, Kevin Lannister, or Hisdar, so whatever his name is.
This one's hard. I don't like any of these people. It's not Mary Davos. He's nice. I'll fuck Hisdar and kill Kevin Lannister. Never trust a Kevin.
Yeah, I think I would have switched from yours, the Lannisters and the Davos, because I feel like Kevin isn't the worst Lannister, and at least he has money.
Oh, that's true.
Meanwhile, Davos, while not in a cult, is very closely tied to a cult.
But he's like anti-cult, and he's good with kids.
Yeah, but he likes Stannis, and that's a problem. That's a red flag. He
likes Stannis. That is a big red flag. Fair.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for today, Christine.
That's it. We did it. We made podcast.
Yeah. So listeners, you guys can find us on Instagram and Twitter at _podofthedragon. You can email us with your own theories or your just like hellos to us over at podofthedragonpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find our store on Etsy, Pod of the Dragon, and we're also on Facebook. Christine, do you have anything that you want to plug right now?
Yeah, if you guys want to follow my band, I think I said at the top of the episode, we're looking for a bass player right now. If you know anyone in New York, but if you want to just check us out, we're at Chaos Pixie NYC. And then I have another project. We're doing a couple gigs coming up called Hard Cider. That's like acoustic covers. And that's at Hard Cider Music. So if you're ever in New York, you want to check us out. Or if you just want to follow us on Instagram, just give it a click. How about you? What do you got going on?
Same as usual. You guys can follow me on Instagram at @low_mazzy, LO_MAZZY. And I sometimes will post on there a discount code for Athletic Brewing. They are a sweet non-alcoholic beer company that I'm an ambassador for. I just put an order in today. They have a new seasonal beer that just came out. It's called the Chelada Nada, and it's like a Michelada non-alcoholic. I'm really excited to try it. So I can't wait for that to come in the mail. Yeah. That
sounds great.
I know. I'm really excited. So
that's really cool. Yeah. So if you want to do our drinking game where you drink every time we say King Fluids, use the Athletic Brewing beers so that you don't.
Or, you know, if you're into
responsibly drunk, if you do whatever you want, you're an adult, but
yeah, look, I drink alcohol too. I just happen to like this shit a lot. All right. So listeners, we'll be back next week with another minisode, and then we'll be continuing on with this epic Game of Thrones rewatch. We should be kind of finishing it up right before House of the Dragon starts kicking off later this summer. So we are super excited to dive into that. Obviously, that is what our podcast is named for.
Why so we're here.
Yeah, it's coming up faster than we expected, and we're excited.
Yes. I think our timing's going to end up being perfect with this rewatch.
Yeah, we've got some other ideas that we'll, you know, be pulling up in between seasons, Fire and Blood book club situations, stuff like that. But yeah, we're excited to actually get into that show when it starts this summer too.
Yes. All right. So
until next time, dreams didn't make us podcasters, Christine. Dragons did.
Dracarys.
Bye forever.
Bye forever. Yeah, I feel like I've said it before, like, she's the kind of character that I would like, but, like, she does annoying things, like burning children.